All right, we're glad to have our college students in, and hope everyone's having a good holiday. I'm going to pass this around, prayer requests. If you have some, then put that on there. These will also be posted on our website for prayers. So if you have a special prayer request, that's a good place to get some folks praying about it. We're in Romans chapter 3. And let me say that I really do appreciate Eric. He had to leave and take his mom to the airport here this morning. She's flying out to see her other son. Let's hang on just a minute here. It sounds like we have a crowd coming down the hall. One thing about this building, if you move, you can hear it. All right, as I was saying, I really do appreciate Eric picking up the class last time. I listened to that class. If you've tried to listen to it, we usually get things uploaded onto the website by Monday, pretty early, at least by noon. But something happened to our process this time, and only about exactly half of the class is there, and then it cuts off. And Corey accidentally pulled out the thumb drive whenever he was uploading it, so we'll get that corrected this week and get that last week's class and this week's class uploaded on the website. And I encourage you to go back and listen to those classes. I really, and I wish Eric was here, but you can pass this on. Eric does an outstanding job. He's a really sharp young man, and he only has to hear something one time, and he's not only has it, he understands it. And it was obvious to me as I listened to that class how well he understood the principles that he was sharing with you. He went back and he talked about that law and faith principles are not just New Testament principles. They're Old Testament principles as well. And we're going to use that and build on that some today, because in this section that we are right now, we're right in the transition period. And chapter 1, Romans chapter 1 verse 18 through chapter 3 verse 20 is just really works over the concept of how we try to be justified by keeping law. And there is one and only one possible outcome to that, and that's in chapter 3, verse 20. And so somebody read Romans chapter 3, verse 20 for us.
Because by the works of the law, no flesh will be justified in his sight, for through the law comes the knowledge of sin.
Okay. So, that first part, therefore no one will be declared righteous in his sight by observing law. And hopefully, if you're a part of this class, you fully understand that at this point. You try, in your relationship to God, you try to repair that relationship. And what is it that has done damage, destroyed that relationship? My sins and my iniquities have separated me from God, right? And how many sins does it take? Only one. James will say, if a man keeps the whole law and offends in just one point, he's guilty of all of it. We've been over and over and over this. And I deliberately want to go over and over and over it, because if you ever lose that, then you're going to lose the whole concept. Because by keeping law, any law, no man will be justified in his sight. If you never sinned, you got to go to heaven. Why? Because there's nothing to separate you from God. In fact, you can go up to the door of heaven and say, I want in. Because if you're righteous, then there's nothing to keep you out of heaven. But if you stand before God and you have one single sin charged against you. When you stand before God to be judged, that sin will keep you from going to heaven. And only when we understand the absolute nature of that do we comprehend our condition. Because as long as we start keep comparing ourselves with other people and we say, well, I'm a pretty good person, I don't do this, and I don't do this, and I look at all these other people and they do all these things, as long as that's our mindset, then we're going to try to justify ourselves. And we're going to feel good about ourselves. And that's exactly what Jesus condemned in the Pharisees. They judged themselves by others, and they felt good about themselves, and he said, you're hypocrites. You're hypocrites. Because there are things that you do, and you have just changed the name of it to make it seem like it's not sin. Can you think of anything they've done that with? He will say, you who rob temples, do you not teach not to steal? And he's talking to these religious people. And they wouldn't, if anybody ever accused them of robbing temples, they would vehemently deny it. And he said, you also refuse to support your parents in their elderly age because you say Korban. And that was a term, when we were kids, we used to play a game, and when you wanted to, like, hide and seek, and when you wanted to get yourself out of the game, you would say King's X. And that means, okay, everything is suspended. All the rules are suspended right here. And I can leave here and I can go do whatever I want to as long as I have King's X. And that just suspends all the rules. Well, that's what the Pharisees had allowed themselves and others who were in their group to do. They would say, Korban. And Korban meant any money that would otherwise have been used to support my elderly parents, I'm going to dedicate that to God. And of course, they got some kickback from it in some form or other. They got some benefit for that. And so they would give that money to the priest and to the hierarchy, and they would say, that relieves me of my responsibility of taking care of my elderly parents. And the world is filled with that. And Jesus said, and you teach for doctrine the commandments of men. And then he will say, and many other such things like this you do. And the world's still doing that. And so only when we understand, and this section of Scripture, 118 to 320, it scrapes away and it scrapes away and it scrapes away all of the layers that we've built up to feel good about ourselves, to think, I'm okay, you're okay, because I'm not okay and you're not okay. We're separated from God. And Romans 1:18 to 3:20 just keeps on scraping and keeps on scraping until it's down to the bare metal. Just the bare essential facts. And the bare essential fact is, therefore, no one will be declared righteous in his sight by observing law. And the article "the" is not in the text. It's been added here. And Galatians chapter 3, verse 21, Galatians chapter 2, verse 21, we've been to these verses over and over again. If a law had been given that could have given life, verily righteousness would have come by the law. It's not a matter that he took away an old law and he gave us a better law. He was capable of giving a perfectly good law the first time, and in fact he did. And what that law did, and as the verse we just read, no one will be declared righteous in his sight by observing law. Rather, through law, we become conscious of sin. The law teaches us that we're sinners. And that's exactly Eric's point last week, and he really did an outstanding job talking about the law was a schoolmaster, a pedagogos, to bring us to Christ. And I have to tell you, as I listened to it, I loved his illustration about we're climbing this mountain, and we climb this mountain, and we finally get to the foot of the cross, and we're completely undone, and we're just laying flat, prostrate before the cross and saying, God, be merciful to me, the sinner. And he said, and the law comes up and taps us on the shoulder and says, I'm out of here. I've done my job. And that's exactly right. That's what the law was intended to do, to teach you what was right and then show you that you can't do that on your own. And by doing that, it drove you to find something better. There's got to be something better than me trying to be good. Because when I look in my heart of hearts and I look at myself in relation to God, I know I'm a sinner. I know what I think. I know things I've done. I know things that I don't want to do that I keep on doing. And I know that I'm a sinner. Now, hypocrisy will cause me to say, well, I look around and, you know, look at all these other people here and I'm doing better than most of them are. So, you know, it's kind of like I've used this illustration before. Whenever I was in junior high school, I went to a really, really, really small school and was selected as the outstanding athlete in the school. The only problem was we never won a game. So I was the best of the worst. What good is that? You know, I mean, it may be good within your own little circle here, but it doesn't mean much when you get out, you know, when you get out into the reality of the world. And so when we get through from 1:18 to 3:20, we have seen if Jesus Christ had never come to this earth, and this is the question, this is the touchstone, this is what you keep coming back and asking yourself when you struggle with accepting and understanding these principles. If Jesus Christ had never come to this world, would man be lost or would he be saved? Lost. The Son of Man came to seek and save that which was lost. We were lost. If there was no Jesus, if there was no Bible, if there was no cross, if there was no church, if there was no Lord's Supper, if there were none of those things, man would be lost. Yes, sir.
How does it fit when Jesus said, I have not come to destroy the law, but to fulfill it? How does that fit? Does that fit here? I mean,
yeah, it does fit here. And actually, it fits in the transition from where we've been to where we're going. He was able to set aside the law because he met its every requirement. Here's a question for you. And thanks for asking that. Was Jesus Christ saved by the law? That's one of those thought questions for those of us. Did the law save Jesus? The answer is no, it did not. Let me tell you why. Jesus saved Jesus. He lived a perfect life. What the law did is when you had Jesus, and Jesus is brought to answer to the law, then everything that the law required, if it said, thou shalt not do so and so, Jesus could say, what? Not guilty. Not guilty. Not guilty. Not guilty. Not guilty. Not guilty. Every single time. And whatever the law required, Jesus could say, I fulfilled it. I did that. I did that. And he could say it in honesty. He did. I have fulfilled the law. I have filled it completely full. All the way to the top. There's nothing lacking in my meeting all the requirements of the law. And so when all that's done, said and done, the law didn't save him. The law just didn't condemn him. You with me? The law didn't save him. But the law didn't condemn him. That's the purpose of the law. It teaches us what's right and it says, as long as you do this, you and God are cool. You're okay. But when you don't do this, when you transgress the law, and what's that a definition of? Sin. Transgression of God's law. When you transgress the law, when you miss the mark, when you don't live up to this, then the law demands that you pay the penalty. And there's only one penalty for sin. What is it? Romans 6:23. The wages of sin is what?
Death.
Every single time. And so what that means is every single time somebody in this world sins, somebody's going to die. Every time somebody sins, somebody's going to die. And the law says what? It's you that's going to die. And Eric said last week, when you're compared to the law, you say, but I don't want to die. The law says tough. It doesn't matter. What you want has nothing to do with this. This is what righteousness demands. And you're going to die. And we are absolutely without any hope. And so in this process of this whole thing, we've talked about, you know, sometimes as we begin to understand it, we start out saying, well, you know, I can only be 50% righteous, or, and God's going to have to take care of the rest of this. And I've told you before that I make myself keep a sermon outline that I preached a lot of years ago that had, here's where I am and here's where I have to be. And I draw this line and I say, I can only get this far. And I call this space right here the faith gap. And so I was teaching works to this point plus faith is going to equal your salvation. That's not true. And I'm really, really sorry. But every time I see that outline, I want to throw it in the trash. And I say, no, I need to keep it. I need to keep it for my own sake. Because your righteousness, when you put your righteousness in the balances, guess what happens to it? It doesn't come up a little bit. It bottoms out if there is one single sin on the other side. Bam, all the way to the bottom. Because if one sin brings death, you know, where do you go from there? Particularly if you can't do anything about it, and that's where we find ourselves. I'm a sinner, and you're a sinner, and what can you do about it? You can say, I'm sorry. That's good. You can say, I won't ever do that again. Good. You're probably lying, but fooling yourself. But what does that accomplish? Because what are you going to do about those sins in your past? What are you going to do about them? Saying, I'm sorry, doesn't take care of the wages of sin is death. The penalty for that sin is death. It doesn't take care of that. And the truth is, you can't do anything to take care of it. What if I were to decide, okay, I realize I'm a sinner, and I realize, you know, where this is leading, and I don't want to go there. I don't want to be eternally separated from God. I don't want to be punished for my sins for eternity. And so what I'll do is I'll lay down on the wooden cross, and I'll let you drive nails through my hands and through my feet. And you hang me up there until I die. Is that going to get you to heaven? Yes or no? Is that going to get you to heaven? Why? Okay. That doesn't satisfy the demands. Why?
You deserve it.
That's exactly right. Even in the Old Testament, when a lamb was to be offered, guess what? It had to be one without spot and blemish, didn't it? And guess what you are and guess what I am? We're blemished. We're spotted. We're cancerous. We got a death disease. And we brought it on ourselves. And there's not anything that we can do to get rid of it. And you can try and you can beg and you can plead and you can call for the rocks and the mountains to fall on you, but it doesn't change the reality of it. And so the law, and we turn to the law for the help, and the law says what? Sorry, buddy, I can't help you. Here's what's going to happen to you. You're going to die. And we turn here and the law says, you're going to die. And we turn here and the law says, you're going to die. And we turn here and the law says, you're going to die. And all we hear is, you're going to die. And we look up and the law says, you're going to die. If we're living under law, and we look everywhere and we can't escape. And so Paul will say in Romans chapter 7, the last verse, O wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from this body of death? I don't have anywhere to go. I have no recourse. I'm guilty and I know I'm guilty. But I can't do anything about it. And so that's what it's like to try to be righteous under law. And that's why he says, therefore, no one will be declared righteous in his sight by observing law. Rather, through law, we become aware of sin. That's what the law does for you. Now, is that a good thing? Yeah. What if you didn't have any way to know when you had sinned? You'd never feel any twinge of conscience. You'd never feel any guilt. Is guilt good or bad? Is your conscience good or bad? It's good. Does it hurt? Yeah. So if good is to get rid of all pain, as our world operates with, and not just our generations, but many generations prior to us, we want to get rid of all pain in the world, and then we'll be in utopia. Well, that way, you just die and go to hell, and you never knew that it was going to happen. This way, you have forewarning. The law tells you what kind of trouble you're in. And it, as a schoolmaster, directs you in the right direction so that you'll go to the right place to get something done about it, where something can be done. And where does it take you?
Gospel.
That's right. To the cross. And at the cross, you hear an incredibly good news message at the cross. And that message is, God so loved the world in this sick state that he said, I will send my son, God's Lamb. That's what John the Baptist said when he looked up and saw Jesus coming, didn't he? Behold, God's Lamb. That does what?
Takes
away the sins of the world. Here he is. God sends his Lamb, and what's going to happen to that Lamb? He's going to be sacrificed. He's going to die. That's what he came for. And Satan and sin and the devil are going to do everything they possibly can to him. But all they can do is kill him. And the good news is what? Up from the grave he rose. Right? The grave couldn't hold him. Hebrew writer will say he entered into the strong man's house, he tied him up, and he spoiled his goods. Now, you can't do that if somebody's at home. You can't walk in broad daylight and spoil somebody's goods, take their possessions, if you're not stronger than they are. And so he walked right into Satan's very home place. I mean, his own domain, death. He's had that power. And he walks in there, and he says, may the best man win. Let's see who walks out of here. And he tied him up, and he spoiled his goods, and he walked out victorious. Now, that's the good news. That's the beginning. That's the basis of the good. The good news is, he's going to do that for us, too. He's the first fruits from the grave. And because he lives, I now can have the confidence that I will live. And so we go to verse 21. But now righteousness from God, apart from law. We've been here. I know I've come back and forth, but I also know how many times it has to be said to sink into us. A righteousness from God is not from you, not in any part or parcel. A righteousness from God, apart from law, has been made known. What are you going to appeal to for this righteousness? You've been appealing to your own life and how good you were and how you were better than somebody else. And that got you nowhere. It got you worse than nowhere. But now, a righteousness from God, apart from law, has been made known. And the law and the prophets talked about this. We just never listened to them. This righteousness from God. And just keep hanging on that. From God. This righteousness is going to come from God. It's not going to come from how good you are. The good news is you don't have to be good enough to go to heaven. Anybody in here think you're good enough to go to heaven? Then why do we say, well, if anybody deserves to go to heaven, then my grandma deserves to go to heaven. Why do we say that? It's just, it means nothing. Yeah, it makes us feel better. But you know, the truth is what? Nobody deserves to go to heaven. So anything you're going to say after that has no meaning. So when you start talking about if anybody deserves to go to heaven, then my mama or my daddy or my grandma or my grandpa or whoever you want to say deserves to go, then you've said nothing. They're the best of the worst. And everybody, all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. There is none righteous, not even one. And so we're all in the same boat. The ground at the foot of the cross is level, isn't it? But now righteousness from God apart from law has been made known, to which the law and the prophets testify. This righteousness from God comes how? Through faith. Rather than what? Through law. Through faith in Christ Jesus unto all and upon all them that believe. Pistis, have faith, the same word that's up there earlier. It's through faith. And it comes upon all who have faith. For there is no difference. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Ground at the foot of the cross is level. It's my line there. And are justified. And we've hit these words already lightly, so I won't go back over them again. They're justified freely by His grace. You got to... completely new vocabulary than any, none of these words have showed up in 1:18 to 3:20 when you're talking about trying to be righteous under law. Free has nothing to do with it. Because if you're righteous under law, what do you talk about? What you owe me. I deserve it. If righteousness comes through law, then you can go up to heaven's door and kick it in and walk in. Because it's owed to you. We're justified freely by His grace. Grace is something that's undeserved. A gift that's undeserved. Through the redemption that came by Christ Jesus. God presented Him as a sacrifice of atonement or propitiation. That's that temple sacrifice, that altar sacrifice. Our word pictures back that we've already gone through. Through faith in His blood. And now we come to the phrase that we're going to progress. He did this to demonstrate His justice. Tell me who the pronoun here is. He and His. Who is it? Read it. He did this. Look back up at verse 25. God presented Him. Who is Him? That'd be Christ. God presented Him, Christ, as a sacrifice of atonement through faith in His blood. He, who is He? God did this to demonstrate His, God's, justice. Now, wait a minute. Why does God have to be? Why does God's justice have to be demonstrated? Who in the world would think that God wasn't just? Well, there is somebody. Can you think back? I mean, let your mind go back. And think about in the Old Testament and people that you know in the Old Testament. Did all of them go to hell? This is yes, this no, y'all don't know. Did Abraham go to hell? Abraham didn't go to hell, folks, okay? Abraham went to heaven, all right? Now, did he go because he was a good man? He didn't go because he's a good man. Was Abraham a sinner? We can all agree on that, right? All have sinned. There's none righteous, not even one. Was Abraham a sinner? Yeah. We even know about some of his sins, don't we? Was Isaac and Jacob and Joseph, were all these people sinners? Yeah, they were sinners. But they didn't go to hell. Now, have we got a problem here? We got a problem. Somebody's got a problem. And if in fact they are sinners, and if in fact they didn't go to hell, guess who's got a problem? God's got a problem. What's God's problem? God claims to be righteous, doesn't He? And if God is righteous, then every sin must receive its just penalty, and there's only one. But what if I can go back and dig up some folks who weren't eternally separated from God? Then it would give me a problem with God. Wouldn't it you? I mean, we got a problem. And we're going to have to work with that problem. Now, here's our question. What? Yes, sir, Anthony.
I was just going to say, this morning, whenever we had the scripture reading, it was from Isaiah 53, and one of the things that I noticed whenever they read it, which I mean, I noticed before, but it really sunk in. He's talking in the past tense in that where he's saying, you know, he was wounded for our, you know, for us, by his stripes, we are healed, and all that stuff, you know. So it's before Christ came, but whenever he's prophesying that, he's speaking in the past tense.
That's right.
So whenever they read that, it's one of just for me, it kind of, you know. When you're talking about Abraham, you're talking about these people in the Old Testament, and it just kind of fit together there.
Your own foot. That's exactly right. Revelation will talk about the Lamb that was slain from the foundation of the earth. Now, ain't that a kick in the head? The Lamb that was slain from the foundation of the earth. When was the Lamb slain? About AD 33, wasn't it? But there is some sense in which the Lamb was slain from the foundation of the earth. And I cannot believe the bell just rung. Let's at least set the stage. I need some volunteers to quickly read some passages. We've got 5 minutes here. Somebody give me 2 Samuel 12:13. Who'll give me a hand? Who'll get it? Got it, Eric. 2 Chronicles 7:14. Need a hand. Okay, Stephen. 2 Chronicles 7:14. Jeremiah 36:3. Okay, Anthony. That's Jeremiah 36:3. Isaiah 55:7. Okay. 55:7. And while you're right there, get Isaiah 44:22 also. Can you remember both of those? Isaiah 55:7, 44:22. Psalm 103:12. Somebody. Okay. 103:12 back here. Give me Psalm 85:2 and 99:8. Can you remember both of those? 85:2 and 99:8. Give me one more. Leviticus 19:2. Who's got it? Leviticus 19:2. Give me a hand. Okay. Leviticus 19:2. Okay. I want you to listen to these. Let me tell you what you're going to be hearing. We're going to talk next week about what happened to sin in the Old Testament. That's pretty important. And the reason this is important, if you'll look at this right here, he's going to say, he did this, talking about he presented Jesus as a sacrifice of atonement. He, God, did this to demonstrate his justice because in his forbearance, he left sins committed beforehand unpunished. There were some people before the cross that God did not adequately punish their sins. And guess who knew about that? Satan knew about that. And when God claims to be righteous, and there were people who were sinners that God didn't punish their sin, and so did Satan have a pretty good case against God when he said, God, you say you're righteous, but you just pick out your favorites. And you save this one, you save this one because you like them. And you didn't punish the sins of this person, and so I'm saying to you, you're not righteous. You say you're righteous, but you're not righteous. Sounds like a pretty good case to me. Don't it to you? Now, what happened to sins in the Old Testament? Somebody tell me real quick. What happened to sins in the Old Testament? What did God do with them? Be real careful. I set you up. Okay? We've heard all of our life that God rolls sins forward to the cross. That's actually not true. Now, I'm not saying that there is no concept of that thought that is not applicable. But let me tell you what God did in the Old Testament. He forgave sins. We've read it and we've read it and we've read it. It just didn't fit in our theology, and so it didn't stick. We didn't know what it meant, so it just ricocheted off because it didn't make any sense to us. It couldn't be. Now, I want to read these passages here. Who's got 2 Samuel 12:13?
So David said to Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. Nathan said to David, the Lord has also put away your sin. You shall not die.
2 Chronicles 7:14.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land.
What did he say he would do their sin? They forgive them. Jeremiah 36:3.
Perhaps the house of Judah will hear all the calamity which I plan to bring on them, in order that every man will turn from his evil way, and I will forgive their iniquity and their sin.
Isaiah 55:7.
Let the wicked forsake his way and the evil man his thoughts. Let him turn to the Lord, and he will have mercy on him, and to our God, for he will freely pardon.
He will freely pardon. 44:22. That's Isaiah.
I have swept away your offenses like a cloud, your sins like the morning mist. Return to me, for I have redeemed you.
That's past tense. You got it? I have swept away your iniquity. Psalm 103:12. Did I give that to somebody?
As far as the east is from the west, so far has he removed our transgressions from us.
Leviticus 19:2.
Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to all the congregation of the sons of Israel and say to them, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy.
Okay. And I don't think I gave out Psalm 85:2 and 99:8, did I? Oh, you got them? Okay.
You forgave the iniquity of your people and covered all of their sin.
99:8.
O Lord our God, you answered them. You were a forgiving God to them, but an avenger of their wrongdoings.
Okay. Now, with these passages, and I just picked out a few. There's a bunch more, folks. And they've been there the whole time. I didn't slip them in there. Guess what happened to sins under the old law? They were forgiven. And if they were forgiven, then I got a problem here that I got to resolve somehow. God said that all have sinned, and there's going to have to be an adequate price paid, and there's only one price to be paid for it. And it ain't been paid yet. And so how in the world could God forgive sins when the price hadn't been paid for it? That's what we're going to look at next time. Thank you. Thank you.